Welcome to our Deer Springs Ranch Owners Association board meeting. We'll go around the table and introduce who's here, beginning with Shauna Cox.
I'm Shauna Cox.
Ed Belinsky.
Bob Allen.
Bram Fulmer.
Linda Alderman.
Theo Clarkson.
Joe Yeagers.
And Ben Clarkson should be coming shortly, and I'm Dirk Clayson. Financial reports, Linda, why don't you walk us through the financial reports? I appreciate you having them here ready for us.
Okay. The top one is a profit and loss year-to-date comparison, which I just thought would be interesting to see what was happening last year. You can look through that at your leisure. Profit and loss budget versus actual, which is a horizontal one. That is for February. Our income in February was $2,100, and that was mostly our assessments. And it outlines that there. And then the balance sheet has that is current to March 9th, and that shows that we have $7,800. We actually have $8,200 because I made a deposit after I did up this report. There's $8,200 in our main account. $82,000. There's $78,000 according to this report, but I made a deposit since then. We have in the manager's account $1,176, and we keep a $1,000 baseline in there. And I was just trying to count up here. We had two of our aging report accounts. One started to pay up on it, is paying a monthly amount, and the other one was paid off except for $20 for a chargeback account. So that's where we are currently.
And do they not have a budget year-to-date report here?
That isn't done with that last one.
I think it's just February.
Balance sheet.
That's just the balance sheet, but
budget
not
versus actual.
Yeah.
Well, that I did for February.
Okay, and I think we just want to do always a year-to-date rather than just, you know, the last month.
And
You did one for me here.
Well, then that's what I did then. I gave it to you.
Which is actually, it's probably not. It's actually December 1st. So
well, I did December 1st because that included all of the assessments.
Yeah, we probably just need a January 1st through year-to-date.
Okay.
Is our standard report.
Yeah, you have the monthly one. They do the
February
one.
Yeah. So, anyway, that's we're not that far into the year, but the balance sheet is good report.
That's why I gave you this one, then, is because it had the assessments that we've earned so far this year.
And well, remember, we were just going to code those as January 1st, even though
right.
They were received. So if you just if you do that,
yes,
and you do it January 1st, then that'll and that should be just. You know, memorized report.
Right.
Year to date, we always do. Okay. Any questions about the financials?
I do have one thing, and I think this is the place to put it. On these assessments, I was approached by Joe Woods. He did say he knows he owes the money. He's trying to pay the money. He's trying to even refinance his house. He's been sick in the hospital for the last year or two, and that's why he got behind, but he's had no money, and he's still trying to get it in. He said, just look up me some slack, and I said, I don't know what to do, but I will bring it up at the board. So,
well, he doesn't have any serious action against him, and, you know, he's only behind basically a year, and maybe a little bit more, so he's not one of the ones that are scheduled for trustee sale.
Okay.
So we'll.
Okay.
He'll have plenty of opportunity to keep making his payments.
Okay. I'll let him know that.
Okay. Any other items on financial? Okay, water issues, Ben. Oh, let me say, I did skip item two, approval of last meeting minutes, because we did that via the internet. So I think that's a good way to go, so it can be published to the website sooner than the next meeting. Do we want to still do that by the website this month? You know, for next month, same thing, and then ratify it in here? Yeah, I think
that's
so.
What we've done a lot of times. If we can send them out and by email poll vote, approve them so they're legal to put on, you know, and post to everybody.
Right, so maybe we can
make
still have a motion. If somebody would make a motion on approving last month's minutes.
Yeah, I'll motion to do it.
Made by Ed.
Second it.
Second by Ben. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any who oppose? Motion carries. Okay. Item five, Ben.
Okay. Things that we have on here, we left when we went through the agenda, Leaf Spring on here as far as, just so we don't forget some of the topics we're working on. Again, we have not, you know, here in the winter, done anything or really made any progress on there, but we need to keep it on there so as soon as we can get in and work on it that we've, you know, don't forget that. Jody is here. We did sign the corrected water address mailings and stuff. Did those get in? Or do you know if
yes,
they've processed?
They're not processed yet. Those are in. Actually, the girl called me on my way up here yesterday and let me know what she was doing. And they're in the process of getting made and corrected. I don't know what that works.
Okay.
She said she compiled them all into one, but we'll get them all back individually anyway, which I'm like, okay, well, I listened to the last meeting minutes because I wasn't able to attend the meeting, and there was a discussion on where you guys wanted to store these documents and stuff. So I brought the hard copy here. I called Vance to ask him how he wanted me to scan them so we'd have an electronic file copy of them. So he told me what to do there, and I've already emailed them to him. So we've got an electronic copy already, and then these are the originals.
Okay.
And when we were talking about that and hearing the last board meeting about where we're going to store this, he has volunteered space in his storage container at his property, and he has also volunteered to scan all these documents for us, all those past ones. And I said, well, that's great. I can bring them down for you. Every time I come up here, I can take a few boxes back to him.
Okay.
And he can get them all scanned and put them in. And I'm willing to purchase and donate a fireproof extra store filing cabinet for us if we want to keep it over advanced in that container. And I think that would help if we, you know, fireproof, yes, and waterproof because it'd be in the container. And that might be a storage solution for us.
Okay.
And I think he's already, you know, I guess he's going to be talking about putting it on the website, on our extra space that we have. And he's going to do that and keep it password protected. And he'll sort through the documents to figure out how to file them electronically as well as he's going through, because it would be a total pain to go through and scan them all and then go back and look at them and see where they go. You can do it all in one process.
Right.
So I think that was a great idea, and we're going to do that if you guys want to do that.
Okay. Well, we do need to finalize an overall plan, but after our discussion, it was good for him to say we don't need to pay for online space. We've got that and is willing to do that. And I think that's 90% of the value. Because, like, these documents, mm-hmm. and these are ones at least will be online mm-hmm. on the state website, and then if we have them online in our website,
right.
you know, then it you know, some of it, the hard copy, once we know it's on the state website, is irrelevant. I mean, they won't lose it. But whether we do that here or we do have places in town, you know, MySpace is still available. It's the going through and finding a way to organize it so that you can find it. If we just cram stuff in box
right.
after box and 10 years later, it becomes, you know, unmanageable.
Right.
And so we still need to see, you know, what's going to be the advantages of...
You know, the good thing about that is if you have the documents stored online, anytime we need it for the meeting, y'all can pull it up online, print it, bring it in. And we also have a safe copy
right.
stored, the hard copy, somewhere else as well.
Right.
So that's the good thing about that.
Okay.
My only problem with that is that if we have it out to the ranch and we need to pull a copy, say the power's down, we need to have it where we don't have
right.
to drive out there if we're having
no,
meetings
it'll
here.
It'll be online. Everything will be online.
But if the power's down, you can't get it offline, is what
no,
I'm saying.
Or down in Kanab?
If the power goes down in Kanab and we need hard copies, that does happen.
Weekly. Weekly here lately.
Yeah.
Well, and I agree. I don't know that that's the... But if he's only storing things that has been scanned as online, maybe that will work. I mean, that was the discussion before is... If I need something, there's or any of us, there's no way any of us are going to drive to Deer Springs and it's inaccessible for 4 months in the winter or something. We can't get in his place because he's the one that has keys. I'm not sure he wants keys to his personal stuff to everybody. I mean, it would
I've got his keys.
It would be a huge process to go in there and unload the storage container and
to find it.
And go through it. Like
a storage container anywhere, so whatever y'all decide.
Well, the basement's. You know, like when we went through when we was discussing last meeting, you know, Dirk and Dale and I, we were looking for some of these, and they thought maybe it was in the stuff that I had gotten from Barbara Button. It's 5 minutes to walk down the basement and pull up, and I brought up her three boxes. But still, then it's combing through page by page and just random. I just labeled them Barbara Button DSR records because, but I didn't go through and try to organize them. And it's better. I just leave them in the, you know, more the. Organization that she had, because if I need to ask Barbara, and if we rearrange it, she may say, hey, this doesn't even look familiar to me. I don't know what you did, you know, and at least that will work. But I think the online is the important thing. Okay. For right now, yeah, if you want to just give them to me, and I'll keep them until we get a permanent plan.
Right. I think the main thing, if I could suggest, is that we start storing documents online now. For example, I've emailed some, and I've said I want this to be put into the archive and on our recent lawsuit issue. And so let's let Vance develop that online stuff. I'm less concerned about, you know, 10 file cabinets of records from years gone by as compared to documents that we're dealing with right now. For example, Brent and I... met conference call with the BLM today. I needed documents associated with the applications that we've just put in and stuff, and it probably wouldn't be practical to know that they're in some storage container out of state as a method to deal with those types of things. And so, but I think we start the online process right away, and we start getting all the mileage we can out of that.
And I think he's ready for all of that. So if we want to take, like, even one box of archives at a time.
Well, again, I'm not after solving any archive problems until I can solve what do I do with the brand-new document I have today.
Right, and that's right. If we take from January 2010, the new decade, and we start putting everything online, really most of anything that's happened in the past is already irrelevant. 90% of it, you know. Why?
We do.
The one that we needed last week that Kirk was looking for that couldn't find it.
Right, but we had decided it never existed, and if it had been scanned, we would have found it. So going forward, we solved that problem. The stuff that's in the past, there's some important papers, mostly that Dale has in his archives, that you know that he's had over the last 30 years. Most of the other stuff is a lot of stuff that's redundant. I mean, for years now, and Vance has been very helpful in, you know, the meeting minutes, some of the annual meeting, and a lot of that has been, you know, archived. It, you know, it'd be nice to have the annual meeting minutes and the votes that were taken over the last 10 years or something. But beyond that, a lot of the daily paperwork, once it's, you know, scanned and online, you know, that thing, I think that even online, and I don't, you know, how, and it may be cheap enough, and if he's willing to do it, you know, it's like these papers. Once they're scanned on the state website, are we redundant, you know, being redundant to scan them three different times or to keep them while we have them?
So I would say you've got a new test case now. Let's put those online. You know, the current, you know, hard copy records right now, which will work for the next few months, we've got a place for.
But
we need to develop the online aspect of it, and then start using that. And
right.
Saying, hey, this indexing is working.
By next month.
Right.
Yeah.
And this is very important to build the file tree that, okay, water rights, and then this has the water right numbers, at least the ones that we know of, and as we build and perfect those, or if it was grazing as a different area, then, as, you know, as we sign grazing leases, then they get scanned so that Doug Hunt's grazing lease is on there, and we create the differentiation between what's public record, at least within the membership, and what is password protected for board only, because there is a lot of stuff that, you know, really is inappropriate for, for you know, everyone to have eyes on.
And so I would suggest for now that as board members, as we have documents that need to be archived, that we send them electronically to Vance so he can then archive them and save them.
Like in a PDF form, or I guess he can convert it or whatever, but, you know, those are things we'll work through
and
what works best.
As we start doing that, we'll work the bugs out. I'd rather work the bugs out on documents that we're using back and forth every day now than to put effort into scanning boxes that I probably won't use until a year from now to find out, boy, we put a lot of energy into this, and this isn't quite the way we want to do it. So let's start with current.
And all that stuff is so easy. Once you've got the file tree up, you can just, the directories, boom, 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 you can scan and enter in. It's not a big deal.
No.
It's only time-consuming, so he's volunteered the time.
Right, so that's good to know. And once we get things done, the next question will be, I'm not sure that I'm comfortable given, for example, Linda's or Barbara Button's boxes to Vance, who has no authority to see all the liens that were created on everybody's lots, which is the item that we went through and tried to find. So we're going to have to think through some of those things more appropriately. And that's down the road. It is not today's meeting, and I don't want to spend more time on it. Let's start with current documents that are not sensitive, and let's you know, see what mileage we can get from that and develop the system in that way, and I think we'll be doing some great things, and then we can figure out how we deal with sensitive documents and a variety of other things, you know, after that. Okay?
Okay.
I've got one more thing from a lady.
Okay.
DWR. As far as the 8 water rights that needs to change from Deer Springs Ranch to Deer Springs Ranch Owners Association, this is something that Ben and Dirk probably know more because I don't know anything about these. But for those to be changed, this is what I heard the first time I talked to someone up there. She reiterated to me that we would need to provide copies of the deeds and report of conveyance for each of them, and that the county recorder's office would probably have copies of those if they were ever done. I don't know that they were ever done. And that
title agency
could help us find those. And
yeah. And I can look into that. You know, I'm 99% confident they were, you know, never done. It was assumed that, you know, I mean, as DSROA was created and took over the assets of those kind of things, that, you know, that it was one and the same. I think the important thing you already have solved is that we have the correct address. So if something comes up on those, or they're expiring, if somebody files a claim, we get notified. If they put the middle initial in your name or they don't, it's a big, really a big, a lot of a technicality that, you know, when we get ready to develop or use those water rights or something, we may need to update that, but I can look and research in here at the county recorders if there ever was.
And none of those other ones, those 8, have been approved except for the 89 toll business. Would there ever be any conveyance on that or not? If they've never been approved, there wouldn't be a conveyance, is that?
Probably not. You know, if they were filings and they were never approved,
right,
there's really no reason to even update them other than if, like I said, if they send out something, we just want to know, be notified of it, and have them, you know, have the correct P.O. box that you've taken care of. So
you're thinking not, probably.
You know, a lot of them are kind of a dead, you know, water rights never go away. Even if you file on a claim and it's denied, they still keep a record of it as, just for history reasons. So if that was a, you know, something that lingers there as Deer Springs Ranch instead of DSROA, really doesn't damage or hurt us at all. Okay, 40,000 gallon water tank. Again, there's been more discussion since our last meeting. I think that we are all in agreement as far as working, weather permitting, to go in and berm up around the tank and try to solve a lot of the freezing problems so we don't have 2 feet of ice in there or 12 inches of ice, because we've all decided with that tank laying down. So when there's ice in a round tank that floats up and down, it doesn't cause problems. But where it's laying on its side, so when the water's too low, then that chunk of ice is wedged in there. When it raises, then it's banging against the side. That's going to always put a lot more wear and tear on the tank than we want. So getting that tank to not freeze. Most tanks around here don't freeze. And so we'll have to test it and see. But I think that if we put dirt halfway up the tank, it will keep it from freezing altogether. You know, it's where it's standing up off the ground with the cold wind whistling under it day after day, and those cold periods just builds up that ice. But as far as tank lining and tank coating, we've still got to make a decision. I mean, there's more concern, and I don't know, I think everybody probably got the email from Paul. He went to water training a week ago, should have finished his training and taken his test on the water handler, but he visited a lot of people there that are managing and operating systems, and pretty general consensus is as cold as you guys are and as much as it fluctuates, you don't want a liner. Again, like Dirk was saying, most of the tanks around here that the Water Conservancy manage, and even Kanab City, they're on power on on-demand pump. When that tank drops 6 inches, a pump turns on and kicks it back up, and it stays at 95% capacity all the time of its storage. DSROA is going from 20% to 100% to zero. You know, it's up and down every day of the week as we use it and drain it and repump every few days or whatever. And that combination with it being on its side is just so much fluctuation. We've got to minimize the freezing, but I'm, you know, thinking that the liner won't. Brent brought up a good point because he's been digging in the mud. I saw pictures. That the tank is empty right now.
Tank is empty.
And so if we can fix what you're, you know, working on, you can report on the PRV valve, then we can still use the line, you know, as storage.
As storage.
I do think, you know, we need to discuss it. Anybody has a problem? I think we go ahead and right now, the tank is basically drained. Go ahead and cut it off line. Get in and sweep it, squeegee it out, and try to dry it out. I mean, right now in March and April, you know, the only people really using it are the Braytons. And they can manage on watching the storage in the line, and let's start drying out where we can get in there and get better pictures and really see. You know, the only pictures we have is still one Larry was in there 10 years ago. Until we can get in there and maybe, you know, even get one of these contractors that has given us bids, you know, Houston Painting or something that's in North, if we've got to get him to drive down here and get in that tank, he may say, hey, everything I bid, this won't work, or hey, here's a better fix. You know, because none of us, you know, most of us have never even seen inside the tank, and none of us have really got in there inspected now that it's coming apart to know that we're going to solve it better than it was solved last time, which obviously didn't last long enough.
Isn't so. There a shut-off valve just south of the tank?
There is a shut-off valve there, and then there's a hydrant.
The hydrant?
Hydrant's on the down from the tank, from that. So you could actually
open that, and it would pump.
Open that would be your air relief to pump water up the line.
Right, and then, yeah, you could easily do that. We have the perfect opportunity here because that tank has a little teeny bit of residual in it. We clean that out now, you know, push it down or just, you know, do the best we can, get all the flakes out of there, and then let's just start drying that thing out. Because we're not going to have a better opportunity.
Right.
And there's 6,000 gallons of storage from the tank down to the headquarters in that whole water line. So there's plenty of water there to operate, you know, on a, you know, they would.
Can we shut the valve off at the tank so we don't accidentally risk?
Yes, we can.
Right. So if we shut that valve off, nothing can get pumped in the tank, and below that.
And is there an air valve, though, so we can put water backwards in that?
We can go through the hydrant if that's what you're talking about.
No, I'm just saying if we shut the valve off and we pump to the T and back up in the line,
there's a hydrant just before that valve at the top end of the line that it'll start overflowing out of the hydrant.
Yeah, it'll overflow, right. And it'll also allow air into the. So
okay, good deal. I think that's what we ought to do.
So let's definitely do that. Again, you're working on it. Paul is going to be back this weekend, and let's make sure we don't pump any water in that tank. And as soon as we can, you know, get in there and push broom or whatever, and do we need to cut the pipe open so we can push those flakes down the pipe and we're not just contaminating it?
You know, when I looked in there the other day, I to be honest with you, I was just so covered with mud, I didn't want to climb down in. And so I just kind of hung down in and looked, and there's flakes all over in there. I think the smart thing to probably do would be to take a good sized screen of some sorts and place over the pipe itself. Push them, pick up the flakes we can and just toss them out, and then you use a push broom and brush the other stuff down and catch the majority of the flakes that are there before they ever goes in. If not, we're going to have to dig, and we can't even get a backhoe up to that tank for a long time. We'll have to dig out, disconnect the pipe.
How far from the tank is the valve?
The valve is right straight. Here's the
underneath.
End of the tank right here.
Right.
The valve straight down. The pipe, the outlet on the tank is about, I want to say about 6 feet back from the end. So it goes down 6 feet over to the valve.
One of the things that we're hoping is, in order to berm the tank, that valve probably needs to be 20 or 30 feet.
We really
away.
Need to put a new valve in and either abandon that one, just leave it open or something, so that 30 feet out is the valve, so that if we berm around that tank, it's going to bury that valve. Again, we can't do that now.
Valve? Is it a gate valve?
It's a gate valve.
Is it one of the square type?
Yes.
So you could have an extended handle and open and close that valve, even if it was 8 feet.
Yeah.
It's a very good valve. I'm not opposed to doing either way, whatever. But your idea, see, my water tank that I have is buried halfway in the ground. I get a little layer of ice on the top of that during the coldest time of the year, and it kind of just rides up. Now, of course, my tank is, it's cylindrical and it's like this. But it's buried halfway, and the water never freezes other than that little teeny thin layer of ice on top.
And about how full do you keep your tank?
Well, I don't pump at all during the winter. I haven't pumped anything since the middle of December. So,
Melting snow?
What's that?
Are you melting snow?
No. I've got a 2,500 gallon tank. I use about 20 gallons a day. That will last me, quite a long time. And I've actually done really good because I've only used 1,100 gallons, and I haven't had it on, haven't been pumping since mid-December. So
it starts out with the water above where it's bermed, and it still doesn't freeze much.
It still won't freeze even above the berm if you have that core earth temperature coming right up and riding
exactly.
against the metal.
It's
that break from the dirt to the tank and that cold wind blowing underneath it that freezes.
So that should be a good improvement to make then, berm it up about halfway.
We need to coat the outside to protect it from moisture then too.
Well, in this whole problem, one of the bids was to, redo the inside and repaint that. I think we don't want dirt to bear steel contact for rust. So, again, maybe the outside needs a coat of paint.
The actual outside of the it's not a good color, but it's a good water. I mean, it's like got an asphalt base underneath it, and then there's a coat of paint around it. You remember, don't you? I mean, it's like got like that.
So
heavy.
It's good to be buried.
Yeah, so... But still another coat wouldn't be bad. Then we bury it.
Right.
We put in some drainage, around there with the French drain.
What happened with John Harris's on the coating still? Have you heard anything from John Harris?
We haven't. But again, when we were just discussing, because I didn't see all this stuff, but it was still a kind of a gel coat swimming pool cover that we were talking about. And if we're dealing with ice in there, that ice will smash and tear that up in no time.
See, the problem is, and Ben's described it really well. When that layer of ice was in there, it was at about halfway. Okay, so we have this foot thick layer of ice that goes straight across at the widest point. You pump water in, and then that's not only does it move up and down, but it actually starts scraping the sides.
Mm-hmm.
And lots of undulation, a whole bunch of other things.
Well, we're going to eliminate that by berming.
Right? We can eliminate that by berming. And then we'll also have to look at the potential of how full do we keep this thing all the time. And
well, here overall, there are literally in the state of Utah or anywhere, there are thousands of water tanks that are properly treated inside, and none of them are treated with a swimming pool liner. I don't want to be the one to test that new technology. I think that we need to do what... And again, Paul's not here, but Paul's got some updated stuff. Dirk has talked back with the Water Conservancy to talk about, some of the tanks that they have moved and used again, they're going away from some of the metal tanks and doing more of the in-ground cement tanks and stuff on a larger scale. But
what have you got, Brent?
Mine's a poly tank. Poly. It's 2,500.
Yeah, okay.
You know, the question is how to apply, but, you know, we've got two or three people that's their job, that's what they do, is refurbish tanks.
So can Paul work on cleaning that out then when he gets back?
Yep. I think
even if we get down in there some dustpans or whatever, you know, so we don't put a lot.
We could actually pick quite a bit. If anybody has a submersible pump, well, we could pump a lot of that water out, you know, so we could get down to a couple inches off the, you know, we could pump that water out and then go in there, pick up everything we can, and then screen it and push the rest of it down. So if we got something where we can get it, you know.
Well, if we had a trash pump with a hose that will drop down in there.
So that'd be perfect.
But again, we've got to have it to where we can get to the tank from, you know, in warm weather, which we're still 30 days out at this point.
No, I'm worried about the weather.
Seems to me like we need a nice little escape hatch in the back of that tank for all this work.
There is no ladder welded in it. You open the top and then have to.
No, there's a ladder in it. There's a ladder welded in it.
So you can climb down.
You can climb down. That's the way we gauge how full it is, based on
where
it is on the stairs.
Okay.
No, it's easy to get in and out of.
I'll try to check with the Water Conservancy, too. They have some little solar operated measurement devices that. Will then hook into the internet somehow and so that they can see what the level is in every tank without having to go and open hatches and climb inside.
But a float is like, what he's talking about is a float. They have a float in that sets the pump off.
Right.
And that's how they...
We very carefully installed the electrical lines to the float. We have all the hardware's in place. But the float has never. The float will go up and down, but the switch has never worked for one reason or another.
We need a new switch or a new.
So, and we did run a continuity check on the wires, and they are all fine. So, I don't know if the
are the switches on the inside of the tank or the outside.
It's on the outside. The switch is on the outside. Float, you know, goes right up, kind of comes up through the middle.
So we just have a tube that comes out.
No, we got a tube that comes out on the outside. That gives us you can check your water level real quick. But on the float itself, the float is down here. It's on a long metal rod, and it goes up through the top of the tank, and then the box, the controller box is up on top.
Okay.
So.
Okay. I think that's, you know, the main thing that, you know, and I will talk with Paul, and if you'll talk with Paul, I mean, the next thing is the lowest bid was Houston Painting that's in, you know, northern Utah is one of the closer ones that I, you know, we need to see if they'll charge a fee or if they're, you know, if they'll come and actually make an on-site inspection in order to bid it.
We need to, we ought to have somebody look at it and, you know.
So is there power there if we need the submersible pump to run
it? We can take one of them. We can take a portable generator.
And
fire it up.
Okay, water system repair, future plans. Can you update us on that?
Well, what happened was Paul called me last Monday and says that Kyler and Quincy had said that they were out of water. And so they asked me to go down and look. So I went down and looked in the vault. I wandered over to this hole, and I looked, and I couldn't see anything because it was covered with mud, which didn't surprise me. And then I found a broken hydrant down at 8 that was slightly seeping. So I thought we just needed to pump. So we pumped water, waited till it got some pressure. I left. Kyler called me up later, said it was coming out of the hole where the PRV was. So I went down, or I was going to go down the next day and fix it, but it was snowing really hard. So I waited till the following day. And I went down. And you guys got the pictures, but this is the one, this is the actual broken PRV. It would have been better, except Dirk didn't have any ink in his printer. And it broke right at the coupling, the threaded coupling that went in to the PRV. And the PRV itself is fairly heavy, and the pipe has a great deal of deflection. It comes out on either side. We use compression couplings, and then we build a manifold that went into the PRV itself. I think what, and we left it, we shorted up really good. We insulated it, but we left it open because we were going to, because it happened right before the first big snowstorm.
Right.
And we were going to put in a hydrant there and do a couple of other things and then put in a nice, we were going to put a culvert in so you could actually climb down in and adjust that PRV if you needed to for one reason or another. Anyway, what I think happened is I think because it sat open, the ground got super saturated and the blocks, the concrete blocks that we used to support it slowly went down like
it
this.
Was.
And then the couplings, the compression couplings, allowed it to go down and then it reached that point and it broke. And so all I did on the only thing I did the other day is I went over there, I dug it out, and there was a lot of mud on top. I mean, it took a couple hours of steady shoveling to get it all out. I dug it out, removed that, took a piece of 4-inch PVC, put it in place. Kyler already knew he wasn't to pump more than an hour at any one point in time. That's only 3,000 gallons of water. And then that would not be, the head pressure would not be too great that he could use the head, you know, down the headquarters. And so right now that 4-inch piece is in there. The repair is good and solid. It's not leaking at all. It'll just...
So you just eliminated the PRV?
I just eliminated the PRV because, to be honest with you, I didn't have all the parts and pieces or the time to mess with it because by the time I finished, I was working in a heavy snowstorm again. And so I just thought, you know what?
That was Wednesday afternoon.
Yeah.
What's
the
PRV?
Pressure valve.
Oh, okay.
So anyway, I had mud from here down, and I got stuck in the
mud.
There's
no mud out there.
It was swimming.
So anyway, but we're functional. We could have guests. We just got to pay attention to what's going on. And, you know, if you ended up having to pump every day or every other day for an hour, we can handle it. It can be handled, you know. So
one of the things right now with no PRV is that we shouldn't pump that full line full or we'll have way too much
pressure. We'll have way too great a head pressure. So like I told Kyler and I've told Paul, 60 minutes maximum of pumping, that's 3,000 gallons of water. That's about 500 gallons of water from the PRV point down into the headquarters area, and it's about 2,500 gallons up from there. So
it should be pretty good pressure. It should be okay.
No, it's plenty of pressure. When you're down there and that much water's in the line, you got plenty of pressure to, you know, water heater, you got water, you know, toilet flushes, the whole nine yards. So it was simple. It was easy. It was within my capacity. So,
let's discuss what we should do in the future, Brian. Recommendation for what we need to do, or
well, I'm thinking more actually after having that discussion with you, I'm thinking that we ought to, I'd like to put a bypass around that so we could actually clean the screen on the PRV. That's what caused the last problem, is the screen plugged up. The pressure was so high on the pressure side that it broke just cracked the coupling, and so what I'd like to do is I'd like to go in, and actually after you're having the discussion with you, it would probably be a good idea to use metal pipe into the PRV itself, go back a ways, do some, you know, thrust blocking or concrete or whatever on it so it won't move around, and then have a good enough size vault that you could climb down in, clean it out, you know, use the bypass, back flush it.
I was just wondering if you, so the screen that broke is the one when the water's coming out of the tank. That's where is it from the sediment?
No, the screen's on the PRV itself, so you have to take that screen out and clean it out. But you can't, if you can't shut the water off, now we can shut the water off just up the hill at the vault.
You have to drain the whole line,
but you lose a lot of water by doing that. If we had another valve right
before
ahead of it, shut it off, bypass around, take the screen out, back flush it, do whatever we needed to do, put the screen back in.
Have you taken it apart now, the PRV, since you took it out?
No, I didn't.
We will take it apart. I'm curious to know how much crud has built up in it in
since
60
the time
days.
We fixed it before. Yeah. No, I just took and stuck it over in the carport.
Okay.
By the time I finished, it was snowing so hard that I just thought, you know what? And I was kind of wet and miserable. I thought, I got a snowmobile home. Go.
Thanks for doing it.
Well, yeah, thanks a lot for doing it. I'm sure that your compensation is, you know.
You guys can't afford me. Don't even bother.
Okay, that's a good update. Potable water bladder.
So we made a decision that it's too experimental.
Okay. Water system expansion.
Okay, that's part of that discussion is this, that crash cut, you know, we were talking about each one of the cabins. We'd like to put an individual shutoff at each cabin, including a shutoff on each hydrant, because that hydrant at cabin 8 is broken. What happened was is that it's, you know, it failed. Water got into the stem, split that apart. And so I was messing with that the other day. And you know how you can kind of halfway open them sometimes or partially open them and it'll shut them off? So I got it to quit flowing. But anyway, but it would be so much easier if there was just a, you
shut
know,
off.
Got a broken hydrant.
Right.
Shut off. Anyway, we need valves at each of the cabins. We need valves for each of the hydrants. We need good stop and waste for each of the cabins. Because right now most of them, 9 and 10 have good stop and waste on them, but no valves for the hydrants. 6, 7, and 8 all need stop and waste put on, and they need valves, you know, to shut it down.
While you're doing all of that, we talked about a lot of these good, better improvements and stuff, but the thought also just came to me that we really have the ability to have a fairly good fire protection for those cabins, given the size of the tank and so forth, but I don't know that we have any. The hydrants are so close to the cabins that if the cabin was on fire, could we?
Actually, what I'd actually like to do is I'd like to do like I did at the upper cabins, and I'd like to put a standpipe in down there, and we could put a standpipe right down there by the kind of centrally located in between all of the cabins, and then build a box and put some fire hose and a nozzle.
1-inch or a 2-inch hose with the fire hose on the rail.
We could. What I was going to suggest is we use 1.5 inch or 1.25 inch hose with a good nozzle. It's easier to handle. You know, somebody pulled around and we can even use single jacketed stuff. We don't need double jacketed. Lightweight, but enough that we could, you know, use it to.
Something that can get to each building.
And the other thing we could do is we could also use it if we needed to. We could have one of the you know, if the BLM came out or the state, and you know, we can plug into their pump and they could actually boost the pressure from that point if we had to fight the fire, protect the cabins. And while it seems like we're going to have that whole thing open up down there, putting a standpipe in is, I mean, you know, it's $100 worth of expense,
right,
and well worth it.
What is a standpipe?
Simply, it's all it is a pipe that's connected to the water line that comes out of the ground elbow, and you've got an adapter on there, a national standard thread adapter, so it'll, you know, the fire hose will connect directly to it. It's got a valve to open and close it.
Okay, right.
And that's it. And my preference would be to have the valve in the ground. And you have to key operate it so we don't have somebody up there.
Drain of the tank.
Yeah, drain in the tank type thing. And then just have it sitting there and in one of the protected areas, you know, one of the little, you know, spots.
Well, you'd want the key to be on site.
You'd want the key to be right there, but that's
what it needs to just say. Used only by for fire protection, whatever, something just so they won't. No.
We just don't want somebody doing like they used to do up there at the upper cabins, and that's wash their cars and ATVs.
Yeah.
Down there, you know, because that hydrant down there by the tank, that had 100-something pounds of pressure on it, so everybody'd always get in there and
shadow wash.
Use it as a car wash. And when you have that solar pump that's only pumping 1 gallon a minute up there, you know, it doesn't take long to drain it.
Well, that sounds like a good enhancement, I think. Okay, anything else on water, Brent?
No, well, I already said Paul finished the certified water operator course, and I didn't get confirmation from him that he passed his test, but I'm assuming he did and that's done. If not, you know, we'll follow up and finalize it. So that'll be good.
That book came in the mail right there in front of you.
On the water.
To whom it should go.
That's your water department.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It should probably go to Paul. I'll look at it. And so when we get ready to...
Anybody know who Joanne Russell is? Is that Joanne Russell Moon?
No, that's Joanne
Rondo Moon.
Rondo Moon.
Dale?
Okay.
What? Who's Joanne Russell? Get into your memory.
Is it 2 RPO law? Yeah.
Okay.
No, door.
Okay, agriculture and wildlife, fencing needs is our only item to discuss there. And so, anyway, not anything really to discuss until Paul is here. But we've had planned discussions on that, what fences he needs to deal with. I did talk to Doug Hunt about when he could move in cattle and stuff. He called this a couple of days ago. And in any case, he's, excited about all the snow and moisture up there. But on the other hand, it may be a ways until we have any grazing going on. So we'll see how that goes.
Well, will you wait later if it stays wet for a long time?
Yeah, we may have to.
It's going to have to.
Until it warms up and the grass starts growing good.
But, you know, this year we actually have some rotation options because we can get him in the lower part of the ranch ahead of the meadow. So that's what
areas that weren't even grazed last year if we do get our fences tuned up.
Hopefully we need to.
I think what we're talking about is I think that anybody who doesn't come up in the spring to see the grass growing needs to have their head examined because it's going to look great up there.
Oh, beautiful.
It's going to be the best yet.
Yeah. So.
Timing wise, when do typically
grazed
out on Pearson Point BLM area?
June 1. I think the BLM is set up for June 1st.
So to start June 1.
So,
however, Doug wants to get in there sooner.
June
10th?
That's it. Sometimes we put them in the private before then, and, you know, unless we get permission, the BLM allotments are set, and you've got to get special permission to go in. So usually we put them in some of the private area or whatever until they can go out. So,
what day is June 10th.
We'll see based on the weather if we need to get permission.
The calendar, what day?
June 10th.
What day is it?
That's not the date he's bringing cows in.
That's the date they'll all be here.
That's the date that the BLM permits.
But that's pretty close to when we want to probably do a drive. It might be right before that. I don't know what day he's coming. He keeps changing. I mean, we don't know. The weather's not allowing us to do anything. Okay. Sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah.
But he's wanting to come in May for his...
We talked about May, but thank you.
Yeah, we could do a short trail drive even on the ranch just to take them from one area to another.
That's what I'm saying. We could drive them one to over.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Well, and if we could accommodate them from...
We could allow it a tent on the 10th, and that's when it opens up. We could probably drive them from there over to the point, Deer Springs Point.
Push them all the way to Deer Springs Point.
That's what we talked
about. He really wants me to try to get these permits adjusted, and I've been working on it, so...
Okay.
Hopefully by next meeting we'll have the dates.
Okay.
Irrigation water management. We've got these five things here, and I'd kind of like Larry and Dale to talk about those with the basic idea that we have made some irrigation improvements again. Historically the ranch had a lot of irrigation activities taking place on it that have kind of been... drifting into non-use and disrepair. And last year, Dale put in a lot of volunteer efforts to re-enhance all of these systems. But with the systems now being in place and also with the fact that we're going to have incredible runoff this year, we're going to have to manage some of these headgates and pond levels and stuff so that we don't just blow out the improvements that we have here or cause problem with freezing and so forth. So I'll turn time over to Dale and Larry to discuss these a little bit, what they'd like to see happen.
Pond is basically just a retention for beautification. There needs to be a headgate put in the settling pond to protect that area. There's a culvert through the dike, but it's covered up with dirt, so we may never find it until the water gets high enough to force it open. Or if there's a culvert and a headgate laying there that the ranch could put in place. That floor system is protected. There should be a spillway on the silt pond where it drops down in the erosion, or it's going to do a lot of cutting back. We thought the big culvert there at the gravel pit would be used to drop the water down in the bottom of the erosion. Maybe that will happen someday. So there's a very unfinished system at the polywog pond and the silt retention pond there at the lower end. The red reservoir, I think, is in excellent shape. I think it'll receive all the water coming off the Forest Service.
Yeah, okay.
The headgate needs to be protected. If water gets in there and goes to a higher elevation, the ice would freeze on that headgate and rip it out. So we need to be watching the water level and see what is happening with the ice. So it means just kind of a monitoring requirement until the headgate needs to be stabilized. There's two heavy 4-inch pipe up there to put in the ground to stabilize it, but they were not installed before weather closed it out last fall. I really think it's going to be a nice feature of the ranch if we can get the red reservoir so it has water in it on a year-round basis. The half moon, same thing. The headgate is partially secured, but not finished, and the ice could damage it. But I think it'd be fairly simple to wrap both of those headgates with black plastic, which would, I think, warm them up and make sure the ice never adheres to them. A hidden reservoir. I think we need to get a soils engineer in to test the clay and see if we can get it to hold water. When the water starts flowing, you want to put water over into it, I guess.
I think so, it depends on how fast everything comes off.
Test it again?
Well, even if it's just that we fill it up to hold it and then turn it loose.
Use part of the runoff.
Or hold it and let it feed the ground source. Part of the concern is the Tappan Reservoir is set to take water, and the diversion out of Meadow Canyon is set to make that happen, but we still have not made the connection between Half Moon Reservoir on down to the ranch and the Polywog Pond. So we fill the Half Moon Reservoir full and then have more flooding or more runoff.
We'll wipe it out.
We don't have anywhere to put it. We'll have to just turn it back into the ditch. And so to use the hidden reservoir, to capture part of the water as it runs off. And then if it does not fill the half moon reservoir, we can go ahead and turn the hidden reservoir loose and let it run on down to the half moon. Just a way to temporarily capture a body of water.
The whole system is excellent. The all the water coming off the forest goes in Red Reservoir. We have a beautiful reservoir there that we can always release water from there
to the other one.
Down into the irrigation in the Wet Meadow, the Hidden Reservoir, on down to Half Moon. But the system is not tied together like Larry says. And after it leaves Half Moon, it could do a lot of damage immediately and still never serve the Pollywog Pond, which the Pollywog Pond I don't think will get enough water up by out of that first valley. There's just not enough runoff in that first valley to serve that. It used to always come around the hill out of the well field to maintain the water level. That ditch has been really almost totally destroyed. And one area is eroded out 20 feet deep.
That ditch is on the inside of the road that came around the hill? Is that where that water came?
Yeah. And so quite a bit of work has got to go into tying these systems together. And there also, you show on here the fish ponds. There's two new ponds up there now, and we've observed in the last month, one of them is filling up with water over on the west side. And so that'll just give us a little bit more of a catch basin. But there's still a ditch system between a lot of these. There's head gates to be done. Hopefully you can schedule in money and people tell you what could and should be done. But how it gets done is a different matter.
Well, I think the main thing is, in addition to Dale and Larry, who are still, you know, spending trips and stuff up there, but are not up there every day, you know, Brent, I think that you know where all these are and stuff, and Paul, that as we can, some of it's almost got to be checked on snowmobiles, you know, before stuff totally melts and runs off. That, you know, there's not going to be much too much water going through the fish pond, so that's, you know, make sure it's going around the ditch around the outside, or some of these valves open and closed at the right time to not erode out a pond.
A lot of them I'm checking because it doesn't look like it, but there's water flowing
under the ice.
No, right now in a lot of places. And if it's not kind of directed, you can't really control it for the most part, but in small ways you can control it. The snow and the ice create kind of a dam that really does this there, and it'll send water and that underneath the snow it can start a channel that you can't correct once the snow's gone because it's already done its made its course change. So you just need to kind of watch and see. Supposedly getting a bunch more cold and snow tomorrow, so
look out the thaw. Okay, good update and good notes, and if you guys can kind of coordinate some with Paul to help with that when he's back, that'd be great. Any other items on that?
No, I think that's all.
Okay, Brent, next item here.
On the road maintenance, Larry can best tell you. Someone drove out there in two-wheel drive the other day.
Incredible.
It's bad.
Did they get out?
They came out and then they drove back. It's a long, involved story. It's rather boring, other than the fact when you have to drive the road. Why they did try to do the two-wheel drive thing, I will never know.
They actually did it three times.
Anyway, it's bad enough when you have ruts that are linear, that you can just kind of fall into and everybody follows them. It's bad enough. That's my preference. I take my hands off the steering wheel, put my foot to the my pedal to the metal, and just go. But when somebody slides across your ruts and then they create other ruts for you to go in, then all of a sudden you're sucked into those when it's muddy. If it's frozen like it was this morning when I came out, you hit some of those, and I wasn't going fast, and it just, I mean, you can destroy your front end. Anyway, we can't stop people from driving. We can't make people be smart. We can't do anything like that. So
the roads are going to be, and Larry can tell you, let me give you an example. Meadow Canyon, which I use, which Larry uses, and which Dale uses, is messy, but it's all the same mess because we all drive it the same way. So it's, and we all know how to drive it. So when it comes time to dressing it up, it's not going to be terrible to dress up. I'm hoping that we really don't get members trying to get to their properties too soon, give the roads a chance to kind of dry out and not tear them up too bad. I know that's just a pipe dream, but we got a lot of snow out there. There's still plenty of snow. It's going to be a long time till people
say that very loudly, and so maybe it can go on the website.
Well, I'm just hoping that people will respect the fact that if they can't get there, they can't get there, or they come out and they snowmobile in.
I have considered leaving one of the tractors virtually parked across the road to block it, but then there's always the one or two that'll go around it and make a bigger mess and get stuck. But people need to plan to go out there, and if it's snowy, they should be using snow machines and not fighting it and making, or drive it the right time of day.
Or drive it at the right time of day. That's probably the biggest thing, is just drive it at the right time of day. But as far as part of road maintenance is, I guess you guys know, I think Paul's reported to you, Ben, that the batteries on the grader are dead. And
he was going to start looking to price.
Right, Sean, could you have Don check on some? Is there
24 volts.
Two 8D batteries. It's a 24-volt system.
Two 8Ds.
24-volt.
8Ds.
Yeah, he did say, and everybody's confirmed they are older. You had looked at them one time, and he can jump it, but again, it's hard to jump a 24-volt off of a 12-volt battery. And
yeah, well, the last time we did it, we brought two trucks in, put one on each side, and fired it up.
Isn't it two 12-volt batteries?
It's two 12-volt batteries, but it's wired. They're wired in series, so it's 24 volts.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, we need to look at that. We need to look at it in a hurry, because when we start getting on these roads, we want to be able to get on them. We don't want to have to wait. No, we need the batteries.
Well, and for those that don't know, the Kubota is still completely out of commission right now.
And that's
the next
thing I was
going
to talk
about. How soon do you want them?
Well, if you can find us a good price, I say we buy them and just get them out there.
Oh, I'm calling right now. He's over there.
Okay. Anyway, the Kubota clutch is pretty much completely gone. Now, just so you know the history on the Kubota clutch, in the fall of 2004, Taylor Button and I, along with Tony Holden, we adjusted the clutch on the Kubota to the fullest extent you could adjust it. Okay, it can't be adjusted anymore. We did it because the tractor wasn't moving when Arnold Button was doing some brush hogging. So we adjusted the clutch. Tony used it to push snow. Winter of 04, 05. The next summer, Kevin used it to work. The next winter, I used it to move snow because I was doing the winter managing thing. The next summer, we had Mark in there. He's the one who tore the door off it and a bunch of other stuff. And he had a kid working for him who just slipped the clutch all the time. I witnessed that. But then I moved snow again the next winter with it, and then Ole used it. Paul's used it two winters, and this winter has been particularly hard, okay, as far as this goes. So this is nothing that just happened. I mean, the clutch has been going out for a long time.
He's told me, all winter, pushing snow, that it's slipping, and he's concerned and tried to be very gentle on it and limp it along.
Exactly, and he's done a very good job. He's pushed it a lot. I think he's babied it a lot bigger, more than most people could do that, He's a good operator, and he does a good job. Anyway, as you well know, with those farm tractors, in order to put a clutch in, you got to split them apart, and so it's not cheap. The last time we checked, and the reason we adjusted the clutch in 2004, I think we got a bid back of $3,000-something to do it.
To replace it?
To replace the clutch.
Who would we take it to?
Yeah. What's that?
Who would we take it to?
Well, Danny Little is who we got the bid from before.
I doubt if you'd beat the price of, Settlers Cove.
Yeah. Anyway, so we're looking at least $3,000 would be my guess. Would you guess pretty close, Larry? And so, like I say, it's been coming on since 04. It's not just happened. And we've used that tractor a lot in the last couple of years. We've brush hogged a lot. We've, you know, pushed a lot of snow and other things. So this is another expense that's going to be coming up. And we need to get it because I think it's kind of critical because we're going to, you know, I've got my backhoe there, but it's only two-wheel drive. And you can only do so much in the mud in two-wheel drive with a two-wheel drive backhoe in relation to main, you know, doing water control issues like that. And that Kubota could help a lot, just having the bucket on it and having it function.
So, again, our problem is right now we can't get anything out there that can haul it to town.
We can't get it. We cannot get it to town.
And so we've got to watch, though, as soon as we can get it to town. Are you
going to move it and spray them in the road? Can you do it in the morning?
You might be able to. What you're going to have to do is somebody's going to have to come out there the one morning because it's going to take a while to load it. See, with the clutch gone, getting it on a trailer is not an easy thing to do. Yeah, and so we get it on, and by the time you try to get out, you better hope the road's not sawed out because you're not going to get it out.
What's our budget on our equipment? On maintenance. I was trying to find the budget. Can you find it? You don't know?
Can
you put it away? I got last year, so I can't find this year.
Almost. Tow the grader in
to the Johnson Canyon.
I'll come get the machine.
Do that on,
that's
mean,
okay.
Even when the road's frozen, you're not going to be able to get a semi truck out there to haul it.
Well, and that's what he said. I know he had talked some about. Wayne Robinson had said he would haul it in for $50 or something, and you know, again, we have a trailer that would haul it.
No,
we don't. So it's something like your trailer or a semi trailer or a dirt trailer.
Yeah. We'll haul it.
We need about what, 10 ton?
But the road is in
bad
enough
shape right.
That even
no,
when
pretty
it's
close.
Frozen.
We've only budgeted $1,000, so we got.
If somebody has volunteered to bring in for $50, that's.
Well, that's in the middle of the summer when the road's
yeah, that's
a
good
guess.
Right.
Chances
are not. No, that was what he had quoted before. And yeah, so in this condition, he's not going to do it. And he's not going to.
Because we have that great big hill coming out.
Yeah.
You could. It'll move very reasonably on a level ground, or not reasonably. It'll move on level ground, but we're not going to make it up the big hill out of the ranch. I think Larry's idea is actually a pretty good idea.
I have a trailer if somebody wants to come to it.
We could actually probably tow it out to.
I was thinking if you drag it out to the pavement, then one of these smaller trucks could pick it up.
Absolutely.
Pretty easy.
It wouldn't be a problem. That wouldn't be a problem.
You know, and that's not far out where you could go out and have another truck or whatever to winch or help drag it up on the
well,
trailer.
Well, you know, if we drug it out to the pavement using our grader, then as all. I mean, I've loaded stuff, a lot of stuff. With you stick the grader here, you put a chain on it, pull forward, and you drive it right up on.
Right. Well, and I just think if we don't do that in March, by the time it's warm and dry enough that we can get it out of there, we're going to need it.
Well,
it needs to be in the shop having the work done on it.
What I was hoping that we could do is I was hoping that when Paul gets back and he gets things under control there, then we can get it out. I like that idea. That's probably one of the best ideas we could have. Is you, dragging it out one morning in with the ranch grader.
We need a truck that's a 3/4 to 1 ton to probably pull it.
I would not dare try to pull it without a gooseneck trailer and something that's 3/4 to 1 ton. You couldn't. I mean,
yeah, Pentel even.
Yeah.
Well, Larry or I both have trailers and trucks that can bring it in.
If it's just at the end of the pavement, then it's not a big deal to go and get it with.
If it's at the end of the pavement, that's not going to be. That's really not going to be an issue. But even at the end of the payment, I'm a little worried about Dirk's Ford.
It's still running, you know.
Larry's is always still working.
Yeah. You want to talk about that Title V?
Yeah.
We had a question about the funding on the Title V thing, and we had two or three. There's a couple of one time. Non-refundable charges that are like $392, was that it, Dirk?
I brought it to him.
And then?
These are on our Deer Springs Title V.
This will be our Deer Springs
what
Title V.
What we're applying for.
I thought I brought it, but I didn't.
Anyway, so Harry Barber wasn't available, so I went to Dirk's office and we called, what's his name? He was in Richfield.
Chuck Valentine.
And he says that then he goes in there and says, well, here's what it's going to be. And he gave us the char, the cost to, for us to maintain the road based upon the acreage, which was $1,330-something dollars. And when we talked to Harry about this, Harry said that they, and Harry has the authority to waive the fees down. And Dirk and I discussed this, and we don't feel that if we're going to do the maintenance, we don't feel that we should be paying more than, you know, $400 or $500 to do it. But, you know, pretty much everything. You know, because they got document fees, they got processing fees, they got fees on top of fees, you know. And so, anyway, we're waiting to, as soon as Harry gets back, and we can talk to him about this, but we felt that it's not worth it to us. If we have to, you know, because if we're going to have to pay to grade, you know, grade it, the fuel, the, all the other stuff, we, you know, we shouldn't be paying them.
Don't forget the insurance, too, because we're going to have to do something with our insurance.
We got, exactly. So it's not, it's really not worth it to us. So we're going to wait, and as soon as we get a chance to talk to Harry. And he has, according to our discussion today, Harry could waive the fees. And if he could waive them down as far as we need them, I don't know.
You guys, this kills me because we shouldn't be paying anything. We shouldn't Title V them. We shouldn't be doing any of this. This is our road.
Something's supposed to be done.
It will be happening shortly, and I don't want us to get into the cut. If we take a Title V, we're acknowledging that the federal government owns those roads.
Well,
and we cannot get our RS-2477 back if we take the Title V.
That's if
that
county
out.
The county does. I've had several discussions with Mark Habishaw's. Even showed him the documents, and he says there's. And he also checked with our attorney to make sure that none of this would have any effect on their case.
We don't want to dilute the county's position,
and
but DSRA doesn't have private entity. RS-2477 claims. So
he's
taking Title V doesn't diminish their
claim. He gave us
claim.
Complete guarantee that nothing we're doing is affecting them.
Yeah, we're not stepping on their toes in any way, shape, or form.
Okay.
We've been
so. On the other hand, we in. Stuck in the middle, and he was very apologetic that we are stuck in the middle and sympathetic said, hey, you guys probably need to do what you can do, and we're going to try to do what we can. But latest update is that it will still be midsummer before they're back on the roads. And so we also are pushing the BLM as they committed, and Habishaw wants us to push the BLM to honor their commitment to bring down their forest crew and to work on them. And so every time we do talk to them, we put pressure on them as well. So I think we're completely in sync with the county and not harming them in any way, while at the same time protecting our intermediate rights to get out there.
Wouldn't it be good for us to write more letters again, the same thing, complaining about the roads to the BLM? It makes them pay attention.
He actually said that, in fact, they thought us requesting a Title V, this is Mr. Habishaw, Commissioner Habishaw, that this is a good thing to help in their litigation to show that things are so bad that private organizations
desperate.
Are having to go apply for right-of-ways. And so he thought it would that was a helpful thing.
Well, but I like what Shauna said, whether it's from the associate, you know, from the board, or we encourage, you know, if we need to, encourage all the members start writing letters demanding this forest crew come down as soon as the roads can be gotten on in, you know, late April or May, that they come down and do the cleaning up the ruts and stuff.
Well, what I think
he will disagree.
We should demand that they do the initial
big cleanup.
And do the initial repair, initial grading, initial repairs, all that stuff. And then we will maintain it after that point because that's going to be the biggest amount of work.
And
I mean, Larry drives
cost.
Out
that's
there, Dale's
cost
out there all the time. He knows.
Yeah.
Okay, so if we all write letters. And the same thing. We can't get out there. The road is terrible.
And I can tell you right now, the BLM's initial response, and again in talking to with Commissioner and in the middle of this debate some just last week, is that the BLM is coming down to run some very limited maintenance to take care of a few trouble areas. They were asked, well, if you're going to go from point A to take care of these few trouble areas, wouldn't you at least be putting your blade down while you're driving from point A to point B and not even given confirmation that they'll do that? And so there's a lot of games being played as to this, and they've had some discussion directly with some of the operators of the equipment. I guess they used to, one of them used to work here or something, that they said, yeah, if we can get down here and get any kind of a permission to work, you know, we know what needs to be done and can work over the roads. But so I think right now anything that we could encourage members to write letters to the BLM and to not, the BLM has deflected a lot of those complaints by saying, hey, we're not stopping the county. We're not, you know, we're not doing anything here. So, and I think that's part of our problem. We need to still put pressure on BLM. Well, in the meantime, they're your roads. We need your maintenance on them. You've committed to do maintenance on them. You've got equipment to do maintenance on them. Let's get the maintenance done.
Well, anyway, just Dirk and I kind of thought, well, you know what? We don't need to be paying almost $2,500 in one-time fees and all these other fees to run a blade over that thing.
No.
Run a blade over that thing.
I agree.
You know, not that I'm necessarily recommending we do anything against the law, but
well, they gave us permission last time.
They did.
We met with them. They told them we could, and I suspect that we can get that same level of permission without the Title V.
As desperate measures.
Well, beans were doing their job,
mm-hmm.
in essence. So I think that's our plan B if we don't get these fees down under $500.
All right, snow removal and drifting. I think snow removal kind of came to a halt when the Kubota went belly up and the grader wouldn't start. So, but the drifting is still there. We're having a little bit of drifting along the airstrip. If we do have the 18 to 24 inches this storm is predicted to fall out there,
wow.
The airstrip will definitely be drifted over. The one thing we do have is our friend Larry over there, who still has his grader up there.
I would have come out Tuesday. Did you see I had driven all the way to your spot Tuesday? But it was such a whiteout. I thought, well, you might have seen in my pickup truck. I went off the road right by where your Chevy was parked. I couldn't see where the road was. And, I mean, until the snow stopped me, I couldn't even tell where the road was, period. So I thought, well, if I go off in the grader, it'll sit right there until spring, and then it'll
be in everybody's way. Anyway, Larry and I, we've had a couple of discussions about this, and we recognize it's hard to follow the road when you're blading that snow off, and it might be advantageous to us to put some before winter gets on the roads that we do want to plow. Put in a few T-posts, strap some PVC to it, so you know where the edge of the road is. And because it's hard. I mean, I plow all the time, and it's hard to stay on the road. You think you know where you are, but you don't necessarily know where you are. And you don't know if you're too far over in the ditch or whatever.
John Deere has a real nice GPS system that will automatically steer your tractor if you...
You know, when I was in Iowa a couple of years ago, a guy had the GPS in his big combine, and it was all automatic. He just sat in there, and it took him through his fields, the whole thing, and he had an experimental model from Case, and it took him everywhere he needed to go, and every single row was mapped out, and I was going, there's just too much technology here. Give me something simple.
Okay, I think we need to put markers next fall. So I'll put that on the agenda so we keep
what we need to do, and again, these won't be tall enough, but, you know, those BLM fiberglass markers that you can drive over that flip back up.
Yeah.
You know, we can buy those pretty cheap, and they have, you know, the pounder and stuff where we can put them in so that, again, they're not in the way if people hit them, and then have a way to, you know,
jerk them out.
Attach some stuff maybe to them to make them taller when the snow gets that deep.
You know, I'm not, I do not want to add a lot of stuff to the roads. I mean, I like the way the roads are right now. But the truth of the matter is that they're, you know, in a couple of places we need to indicate that the road turns or, you know.
Yeah, probably if we just had a few strategic markers.
Yeah, at the top of the hill, the bottom, and at the point, you know, the major points of the curves.
And those people who are plowing out there know the roads well enough. We do not need to, you know, a whole lot of markers. We just, you know, you don't need them every 10 feet so people can see them, make sure they're in the middle of the road type thing. So
one example is going up the Betty Nettle Road. When Paul pushed the snow for them, you can't tell where the road. I mean, it's just a big flat snow drifted field, and you kind of go up through where you think it is. Well, he has plowed the road up through, and part of it is not even on the road, and so you're going over the ditches, the borrow pits, and now that it's starting to get soft and melt, you're in trouble because you're in.
In the mud hole.
In the low spot, and everything that's melting is going there, so not only is it a dip, but it's 2 feet of soft mud and a 4 foot bank of hard snow that you can't
force your way
gouge out of there with a truck. That's not their fault, or their problem, not ours, but the same thing applies on any other road.
Okay, let's, anything else on roads, Brent? Let's jump down to number 10. Ed?
Yeah, one of the things is I didn't have a chance to contact you. I looked through the legal documents that I had, and I know somewhere DSROA spent, I don't know, $750 and put it, I think, on account with Glauser in case there was any questions that we had, they were going to bill us. And even somehow I remember, Larry, do you remember that? It was around the time that the accident happened. I'm going to go through it again. I didn't have a lot of time to read each document thoroughly, but I know somewhere I either saw or heard that we...
Well, we should be able to check in QuickBooks and see if there was a check cover made to them.
Okay, so Linda?
Yeah.
Okay, and that would have been what year? 2004? 5?
The accident occurred? The donkey accident?
Yeah.
Well, that wasn't until Ole was there, which was...
7?
Oh, really? That late?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So
that'd only be 3 years ago, right? Or two, maybe 4 years ago, right? Because Paul and Nancy have been there 2 winters.
Sure.
Ole was there 2 winters.
07.
Okay. I think that accident occurred in 07.
Okay. Okay, nothing on limited liability company yet. And Linda was going to do the update on the fence and gate on Quarter Horse Road.
Well, and I think we basically said until the weather's better.
Right, he's going to straighten her foot out. Okay.
I talked with Art about that gate 2 days ago, Wednesday, and he said he was going to move it up the road to the point where the road leaves, where the road used to go, and turns into his, you know, more into his lot. He's going to put the gate there, and whoever has that other lot is going to have to deal with getting a road fixed or made or do whatever.
Is the gate open now, or do we get a key? I mean, not that it matters now.
I think it's open now.
Is it open? Okay.
Yeah, that sound reasonable?
The gate's open,
Larry.
It can't be closed. I mean,
is the road fixable if he moves it up?
Yeah, it's not. He tends to think that whoever has that lot's going to have to spend $100,000, but if they want to build a 515 up there, they might. But I mean, it's fixable with a.
Well, you take the grader and you push the, you know, make a dip or put a culvert in and push, you know, accumulate the dirt on the borrow pit and fill the hole.
I mean, if he moves his gate up to where it's off of the old road and it's outside of the 20-foot-5 easement, then I think that's all we can expect of him.
And it will be where he's planning on putting it. So
I think then we may feel some obligation as association to help with that road repair. I don't know. But
I would think it, that is an association road that goes to lot, what lot number is that? 150. I mean, the association is supposed to provide a road to the lot.
To the lot, yeah.
But
so.
But
again, whether there's a reason or to spend an hour with the, you know, and push dirt where you could get through on ATV or four wheel drive, but you know, when 150 decides to get there, he's going to have to bear the expense of putting a culvert in and some of that stuff. So we could rough something in for a fairly reasonable cost and be more than we've done to my road.
Well, we fixed your road. We cut 7 or 8 more trees and widened it.
I wonder.
Highway.
It's been a while to go up there to see what's happened.
Hey, wait a minute. That's not my place.
Okay. Any other legal issues?
No.
Go back to Shauna. I know you have to leave, but you can go through your area here.
Okay, thanks. We're still well, I don't know what else we can do until we get some weather that we know. But that would be a good idea for Doug on Doug Hunt on the
Longhorn. Probably one thing, the motorcycle race, we did get a call from Frank.
On the Desert Fox.
White and Dale. He called Dale, and they want to hold the race this year. They can provide their own
insurance
and stuff. I think we should ask them about that.
Did they say what date? Is it in July again?
They wanted to do it on
October 2nd.
Oh, October 2nd. Good time.
Yeah.
That's perfect.
We'll be doing the fall roundup about that time, but that's probably really good because if the people want to come out, they could do that with the coordinator.
If somebody doesn't get back with them, they're probably not going to do it. So we need to decide who's
going to do it. Do you have a number? I mean, you can do it, or I'll do it if you have a number for them. They're the Desert Fox, aren't they? Okay.
Okay, anything? I put on here scheduled activities such as alderman photo. I think that during the course of the year, like Terry Alderman may want to pick 10 dates that he says, I'm doing a Friday afternoon photography class. We'll leave from the headquarters at noon, and $10 per person, four-hour trip up on the Pinks and stuff, blah, blah, blah. That's more my suggestion than his suggestion, but I asked him if he would be interested in doing something like that, and he said, yeah. Larry may have some things that he would want to do up there of a similar nature for, wildlife or whatever. But if we had some of these kind of activities, I think it would enrich the experience and people could perhaps enjoy some of those things.
Maybe not just members. I don't know, because if you're doing like the wildlife thing, you might take 4-H kids out. I don't know if that's a possibility, but it's more of a community.
Could do, but I think our primary thing is members
membership
and their guests. Okay. And also a way.
Okay.
I mean, it doesn't hurt my feelings that Terry Alderman, again, is not the one pushing this. I just use his name as suggestion. But if Terry Alderman has a little extra revenue that he can make from doing that, or, if somebody wanted to have a painting class, once a month up there, or somebody wanted to have a hike, the Lick Wash tour, I think some of those things would be good, and that we could then put them on our calendar, and they wouldn't take a whole lot of coordination, but there needs to be the
person
who wants to do it, and you know, we're not necessarily looking at making any money off of it or anything, but they could make enough money to at least make it worth their while to do it, and then our benefit would be that we're getting people out and doing activities, because I think we still have a lot of activities on the ranch, like Lick Wash and a variety of other things that people are you know, not very aware of.
Well, I thought we'd...
One of the things that I think that we need to... I mean, I've talked to Dale about it, I've talked to Larry about it, the snowmobiling thing. And one of the things that's really nice about that is there's no
tracks.
And I think that maybe, if we have another winter next year like we've had this year, or we ought to take advantage of you guys are coming out and we say, look, we put a flyer out to all the members, or even people in town, you know, because if we can sell Deer Springs to people, you know, that's what we're trying to do, and say, look, we're having a big snowmobile rally. And Dale and Larry and who else was it? Was it Danny or John or was it
John and
John,
Dr. Allen?
They took and went on a big tour of the ranch the other day, and you know, all around, and had a good time. I mean, I didn't happen to take Dale with them; they had a good time. but the fact is that they went around the whole ranch. I mean, they went over into Slide Canyon, just everywhere. And that would be a really cool thing to do, to have, ask people and say...
One thing, John, I think as far as, you know, inviting, you know, we don't have a snowmobile club. There's quite a local group. But if the local Kanab clubs had one event that we invited them with permission and organized so it didn't encroach on the members, but if the Backcountry Horsemen had one ride a year, you know, they tried to ride monthly. If one of their rides was at Deer Springs, and so, again, they would love to have any Deer Springs members that are horsemen, you know, to come and go on a ride with them and kind of guide, or the, you know, there's still a hiking club that hike at least one day a month. If they came out and hiked Licked Wash or some of the neat hikes, but it, you know, they would leave from Kanab at this time and then stop there at the headquarters so that any guests, whatever, were there. But there's 10 different clubs, and if each one of them just did one event up there or something during the year, it would do a lot, you know, have a lot of activities.
Even for the members that are staying.
Right, so that the members that are sharing, the guests are could say, this weekend is the ATV club or the four-wheel drive club or the horseback club, and then people could say, hey, I'm interested in that. I'm going to try to make a reservation that weekend and be up there. I'd love to get to know some of the people that live in Kanab or whatever that are into that.
Those are the times when we can sell cabins if they're not there. I'm going to put it on this shoulder.
Some of these annual events may take more effort than we have, realistically, other than if we just say, well, somebody wants to organize it, we're willing to host it, just like the motorcycle race. We're saying, hey, you come, you clean up, you do everything, you meet all our criteria, maybe we'll come up and shake your hand give you some suggestions and enjoy the event with you. But
right, and that's what I'm saying.
We don't, other than allowing them to use it,
we don't host it because each of these clubs have their insurance policy,
yeah.
They have their organization,
and
they know what they
do. That's why I think we got to kind of look, and that's, again, why I suggest, like Alderman Photo, it's a real low-impact thing. We don't have to do anything other than say, hey, if you want to do this, we'll advertise it.
Well, that's right, because I don't want to have to be doing all that, because if we do a Ranch Olympics, then we do a cattle drive, and a few things, it's going to be at your leisure kind of thing. I mean, this one will be a set time, but the other ones will have to be.
Right, so.
But I do have one other, I have a couple more things. Anyway, I've written so many notes here. I would like to do a tour with the board at one time.
Well, that's
because
the next item on the agenda.
Okay.
Ben can talk about that.
Well, because what I want about the dump station about the dump station and a couple of the activities when we go up there. But we got to wait till it warms up. But we could just go up and make some of those suggestions when we go up.
Well, and we kind of did have a board tour, and that's what I suggested sometime
in May.
To have a board in conjunction with a board meeting, but also have a rancher that we even try to line up. A couple of the members up there that, we've all heard, I don't know how many of us have been, to Larry Bear's garden, and that's his deal. I mean, Larry's into the gardening, and he'll at that time, he's going to be right in the thick of getting things planted and stuff. And what some of the other people have done, improvements at their place, for us to go around, not only the association assets and what we're managing, which we will also hit, but to look at a couple other areas that...
see people's property.
Yeah. I mean, Fred Searle has, you know, he put in this fencing and stuff last year. It looks great. And I know he spent quite a bit of time and money in clearing and seeding to try to dry land farm, you know, not farming as much, just try to improve and do anything, but to look at it together and encourage other members to go and see, oh, boy, I didn't know that you could put in that kind of a solar system, or I didn't know that, you know, and they would then share ideas that
great
we
idea.
Need to know, but if anybody's, you know, we have kind of a tour that's, at this time we're going to be here, and so that people can be in their own cars, and if they need to visit, we leave, and they catch us at the next place or whatever.
That, now, that's a, I think that's an excellent idea. I think the membership should all do that. One of the things is that we should have it that way, because we need to know who lives where. Even though you know it, you can go from place to place and have more of a community spirit. This is so-and-so's property. This is what they've done. You know, I think that's a great idea, and that the membership should know those things, that they're part of a community. You know where to go for help if you need it.
Right.
You know where Brent lives.
Well, 117 is a toll lot.
There's three women who have asked where Brent lives.
I'll take
it. And Dale, when they all had guns, he said, over there.
Top of that hill, point up.
Yeah.
Jody had a question.
I have a question, and forgive me for being new this year and not quite sure history here. I'm curious, when we've talked about the ranch activities before, is there a focus on ranch activities to bring money into the ranch to help with our budgets and stuff, or is this just something to enhance the membership enjoyment of the ranch? We're
both.
Well, I think it mostly enhanced, because I don't have a lot of faith that any of it's going
to
bring any money in.
Yeah,
but
it's mostly commercial.
Going to enrich the ranch experience and create more of a...
and build towards where then it can be more financial.
The ranch is something besides a bunch of individual 20-acre lots. So, yeah.
Okay, so just off the top of my head, too, and this is what my business for 17 years, adventure tour, outdoor adventures, all that kind of stuff. Something like, you know, asking Terry about doing photo tour. Awesome idea, because what a great place to do it. But when you're looking at things like that and you have a professional that's doing that kind of thing, $10 an hour is not even that. I wouldn't wake out of bed for $10 an hour.
No, I'm
well,
saying if,
membership.
If he had,
well, no,
if he had 10 people that came and there were 10 each, and he drove them around for 4 hours, he's willing to do that.
Well, do we know that yet, or is that kind of like...
Yeah, I talked to him.
Well, and with Terry, I mean...
That's okay.
He's going to do it anyway. So if somebody at least paid for his gas, and, you know, he's going to be up there and taking his...
That's a $500 trip.
Right.
So, like, you're asking him for doing it for $10 per person, it's like, okay, that's way under. But if he's just a nice guy and wants to do that for the members, that's what I was just kind of wondering.
Yeah, I mean, we're not trying to make a big deal
out of it,
you know, but it obviously should, I guess my point is, we should expect that it wouldn't be free, that people should pay. When the people come to ride the motorcycle race, they have to pay a $20 entry fee or something. So
something they do on their own. We have nothing
right.
to do with them.
And the same with Terry. Maybe they pay him $20 fee. I don't know what it is, but I talked to him. I said, hey, if you had, you know, some people, they paid $10 each, would you, you know, be interested in taking them out for 3 or 4 hours and, you know, teaching them, you know, they can bring their cameras, they can learn how to take better photos. I suspect on the side, he could also say, and here's my website, here's some of my photos, here's other things that would, you know, maybe somebody would buy a $300 photo from him because they had some exposure, they'd come into town and buy a camera. There may be some other reasons that I think he would do it for that, in that scenario. And I think those are all fine. I think on the other hand, if somebody was up there and they're charging $100 for an event, that we ought to get 20% of it or something like that.
I'm saying, if this is a money producer
right.
for the ranch, then we...
So as soon as we get from the $10 event to the $100 event, we'll be where we can say...
Well, that's
how
kind of what we did on the
making
ATV,
money.
The trespass fee. You know, an ATV, you know, they did account for it and paid us. It's not a lot of money, but they still paid us $5 a person. Right.
Yeah.
And it just helps to regulate it, and it helps us to measure it.
And when those groups come in,
can
I'm
you pick up two of
them?
I think we can get back
with the motorcycle club that comes in, the race, or anybody else that comes in, do we ask them, like I said, sometimes it's free, sometimes it's $25 from the insurance company, to name us as additionally insured on their liability policy for that event so that we're covered?
Yeah, you can talk to them about that when you...
Yeah, we will verify, and we have in the past. When I did it and worked with Frank, you know, this was 10 years ago.
On the batteries.
But they've almost every year.
Batteries, correct?
Yeah, they've had some pretty serious accidents almost every race.
$80 a piece.
They've done it before.
Oh, yeah, they've been out there before.
They're
golden.
The great big ones, the 8D batteries, right?
But again, their whole club, they're going to a different property every month and doing that, so they're pretty set up.
18 inches long.
They're like 18 inches long.
Okay, because those are the big ones for the dozer.
18 inches long.
Yeah, they're 18 inches. They're 18 inches long. Mm-hmm.
They're like 18 inches long. What, 8 inches wide, 6 inches tall?
Yeah, I know. He said that's what they told him, but he's going to call right now and make a double check, and then he'll be right back.
$80. See, they should be going for $200.
I know, but we got a good deal.
Oh, well then,
just hold on. Let me see if this is the right one.
I mean, I've always heard them called 8Ds, right?
There's a deep cycle, deep cell.
For them, is there?
Industrial.
It's like the batteries I got in my solar. They're all L16s, whether they're made by Trojan or Interstate or whatever.
Okay, so we'll look at sometime in May for a ranch tour day, and maybe as we talk to different members that might want to show, like Larry Bear's garden, for example, or so-and-so that did such-and-such a fencing, or somebody who's planted something, you know, we should... I'll try to think of some names. And I think if we can kind of encourage a few activities that have somebody that will drive them, and maybe Jody, we should even say right from the get-go that we should get 20% of the fees collected. So maybe Terry has to charge $12 instead of $10, and then we'd kind of have that as a established policy.
Well...
Is 20%.
If Terry is doing that and making a normal commercial rate, which is the half day, you shouldn't take home less than $500.
And
that would be the normal rate. Then take the 20%.
Oh, okay.
But sending them out with $10 to $12 per person.
Okay.
There's no.
So we need two. Do you have the money to pick up?
Alone.
Yeah.
Right.
But I'm happy to set on any of them just so that there's a...
We
set a percentage, and they price their services accordingly and what they provide.
They reach out to 60-something.
If we just say, hey, we want a 20% for using the property and having access, and then...
It'd be 10%, but...
Right.
You can try for 20, but typically it'd be 10% for use of property. 10% better than nothing.
Right.
Is that what we're saying?
Well, the motorcycle guys, they paid us like $3,000 last time.
Yeah, usually they do it on a flat rate, and that's what we worked out with the ATV guys, was $5 trespass fee.
Right.
So
are we saying 10% or 20? But he's not going to make that much money around here.
Irrespective of that, let's just kind of decide what the percentage would be. Then he can decide what he needs to charge.
Yeah.
So I agree with
you. So are you saying 10% or 20?
Unless we're going to do something
to really help
10%
it.
10% is plenty.
10%.
Yeah. 10% is good because he doesn't have to drive it back off.
I think it's an easy to say it's 10% with a $5 minimum or something like that, because $5 just for a trespass fee like we're doing, again, if they get up to more, then it's 10%. So then that's fair. It regulates itself as high as it wants to go.
Well, yeah, but if they're doing art and he's only charging 10, you can't charge $5 minimum.
Right.
So just say 10% straight across the board.
Right.
Because that could be a cheap one, and then you can charge a heavy one.
Unless we specifically negotiate, like with the ATV or the motorcycle.
Okay.
Good. Okay.
Hey, you got to say okay, because I just told you to buy those batteries.
batteries are
for how much?
Approved.
$151 a piece. They retail at $265.
That's $265.
Yeah.
Right. So $151 is a heck of a good deal.
So
I told him to bring home two today.
Okay. Anything else on your stuff, Shauna?
No.
While you're talking about batteries, I still think it would be smart to get a small solar
trickle charger
maintainer put on top of the grader or somewhere that's not going to get hit by tree limbs and stuff, but it keeps them alive when you.
Yep. I've got one on my camp trailer and on my dump trailer. You know, and they're like $30. You definitely need that.
Okay. Ben, can you cover item 11?
Yes, number 11, oh, ranch report. For Paul and Nancy, the 16 beds right now, again, David Turley, we talked about bringing them down the first of this month, and we communicated, you know, enough that until we can get into the ranch and into the cabins, we don't want any more than we have got. Paul did get the frames and everything here from the hotel except headboards last I had heard. Have we still...
I'm going to raise a question. I think they got 13 or how many? They got certain bed frames here. And if they've ordered another 16 in some
I think that's...
No,
I think
no those are just beds.
Bed frames are the ones I hauled out.
Yeah, that
they're included. They were
the only thing they got in Salt Lake was queens or double...
Mattress.
Box spring and mattresses that they got from Doug Hunt's son, who has a mattress outlet wholesaler.
Yeah.
Everything else they were getting here, and I think they've got all of it except they had some headboards. You know, they had bought the frames and a substantial supply of the comforters and stuff, so we would have extra. But you know, just at that price, they you know we wanted to get them. Paul was trying and had not, you know, done much, but even before it dries out, was working on the snowmobile that he has to go out and
I know that he's been out and done some riding around where he can, you know, where he's not having to go through the trees and
right.
doing some fencing, doing checking on fence lines.
Other than that, I'm not sure that anything else is happened as far
as the
cabins.
I've got an update for you.
Okay.
He's worked on the inventory. He's cleaned the tool room up. I think he's fairly well, pretty close to complete on that. You probably wouldn't go out there and be impressed unless you've been out there before and saw it. It's really impressive. He's trimmed out the windows in the ranch house.
Yeah.
They put the closet organizer in upstairs, so that's all done. And then, of course, he spent quite a bit of time getting that ice dam off the roof.
Right. There's quite a severe leak in the ranch house because of that. So we've got, as soon as it's...
What's creating the ice dam?
It's on the old portion of the house, on the
north
side.
North slope where it just ices up.
It's coming down, icing up, building a dam. I mean, he literally had an 18-inch thick sheet of ice right on the edge of the roof.
So water is actually run down inside the wall, inside of the cabin. It comes out underneath some of the siding halfway down. So it's getting somewhere. Again, that roof is the old wood shingles, then with two or three layers, and the old wood shingle and stuff is just totally rotted out. So no, we're going to definitely have to peel the roof down to and replace the one by that are rotted, and maybe even resheet it with some 3/8 or some kind of a solid sheeting to strengthen it, and then re-roof it with
metal
or asphalt shingles or whatever. I mean, the back's all asphalt.
The back's asphalt. The newer portion.
The new portion is asphalt. So we just to match that, or look at doing a metal on the whole thing. But
we need to, that ought to be one of our priorities as soon as the weather gets to the point where we can actually do it.
Because he had framed in those windows and then actually had to pull some of the frame back off to dry it out because water was coming down through the wall and stuff.
And it's not just coming down like, you know, getting wet and going out. It's actually running.
Gushing.
So.
Fix that immediately.
Yep.
Anyway, those are the,
that's the other stuff he's been working on.
Yeah, so he's made and sent, I have photographs and stuff. He's sent, spent a lot of time. And the trim that he's done inside really looks good. He dug out the woods that was under the snow he had. He ran out. He did get some more, but he's routed the edges, and, they really look, they look well done, and will be a good improvement in there. So that and the closet organizer and stuff.
Yeah, that's totally different.
Absolutely. So he's been focusing on those indoor things. We had things out and lined up to weld up some cattle guards and stuff.
He's
but
got some stuff set up.
Yeah.
Ready to do cattle guards.
Yeah, but since then, it's had another couple feet of snow on
it.
Yeah,
it was covered with snow mostly. And then the other thing is, I'm not a big fan of being out there with a welder standing in mud up to my, that thing. But anyway, that's the other part of the manager's report. I just thought I'd let you know.
Great. Okay, item number 12, I don't have any update on. My fault for not working on that. I'll try to work on it more diligently next month. Item number 13, county zone change. We did put an incredible amount of time and effort into that, and they did agree for now to abandon the change specifically on Deer Springs and all of the zone changes that they were changing. But we're going to basically need to participate with them in some way to redo their ordinances. And
the commissioner and the planning commission agreed to go back and have some work meetings and involve the public. I think that one thing between, again, Shauna was there, and Dirk and I, and, a couple other that are Deer Springs members that live locally, we need to maybe make sure that if we can't make all those meetings, that somebody is there to make sure that we don't lose ground and we stay unified as far as at least Deer Springs needs. There's a lot of things that we're, concerned with and frustrated and battling as far as outside of Deer Springs. But I don't want one meeting to go past and somebody not be there, so if they start changing or something, then we have to redo it. But they definitely got the message that we were unhappy and that just wasn't going to fly. So,
anybody signed up for the notifier, the meeting notifier?
I signed up for it.
And then we haven't
got a single email since I did, though.
Okay.
Other than the confirmation email that said
you're signed up.
Yeah. Well, that's what they haven't done anything.
We did also at the meeting. They said that we would. They took our emails and they said that they would send some notes around. And so it caused a pretty good stir. And I think they're backstepping pretty good. But I think unless we participate, they'll still come back with a more restrictive ordinance. And I don't know why. There's such misunderstanding. In fact, I had talked to Commissioner Hewlett. Dale had talked to Commissioner Hewlett specifically about the two cabins per lot issue as allowed in our deed restrictions. And your husband brought that up in the meeting, Mr. Cox. And Commissioner Hewlett said, well, I'm pretty sure your deed restrictions out there allow it anyway, and so we didn't think we were taking any rights away by, making this change. And sometimes I just want to go beat my head against the wall with some of the stuff that's going on in there. But I think if we're there in force, we'll kind of keep things better on track. So for now, I was pleased that they didn't just go ahead and pass it irregardless of the, public outcry. So I think that's a great step in the right direction.
They weren't going to. Doug Heaton already said absolutely not. We had a bash head in the meeting before that.
That's probably the really good thing is that remember planning and zoning in this meeting would just recommend it for approval. And then it would have to go to county commission. We had enough discussions with Commissioner Heaton and Commissioner Habishaw, and Commissioner Habishaw came to this meeting and informed them very directly that if they did pass it, when it got to county commission, that it would get rejected. And also went on to explain how they didn't have authority without county commission direction to even be considering this zone change in the first place. So anybody that can thank Commissioner Habeshaw and Heaton for taking the stand that they did for our rights. And that was, I think, a difficult stand to take in a public forum like it was.
And he didn't mince words.
And there was no question where the knife cut down.
So, well, I think it's important that everyone recognize all the work you guys put in on it. We really appreciate it. And I myself personally, in the summertime, have no problem coming in and attending those meetings. Wintertime, it's just, it took me an hour to get from my house down to the intersection of Rock Hollow and Meadow Canyon this morning. That's a mile and a quarter.
Well, the thing that I would like to keep everybody a little bit informed of, because there were a lot of comments, emails from members, from board members, and so forth, what is the real change? Well, I'm sorry, because all we can do is speculate, but we know... Because every other day we could get a different set of documents. And by the time you could get some documents and analyze them and then think about typing a report on them, there's another set of documents, and they didn't then make sense, and we'd go back and talk and say, oh, well, we made some errors. We didn't really mean this. But I can tell you, all eight versions were things we didn't want and were tremendously more restrictive than what we have as our current zone. So there were some thoughts. I know Brent, you specifically said, hey, let's attack the issues, not the situation. And I would have sure liked to have done that, but,
because last week I met with Gary Smith in his office three different separate days to go back and say, no, now this doesn't make sense, and Dirk and I, one of us, if not both of us, met with every member of the Planning Commission to get their take, because they're all telling goofy stories to each other. In fact, after the meeting, I went and talked with a couple of the members of Planning and Zoning who didn't show up, and they said, well, I didn't show up because the meeting was canceled. The whole reason the meeting was canceled, supposedly, they were supposed to write on the door, we're canceling because we can't have a quorum. We don't have enough members of Planning and Zoning to show up. So I asked them, why weren't you there? Well, the meeting was canceled. I was told not to be there. So they're playing. There's some
business
going on.
It is a game, and it's to be played. They wanted to shove it under the rug for two or three months so they could get this thing passed because of the meeting that we had before, and we threw a fit, okay, at that last meeting. And I had been speaking with one of the commissioners before the meetings, and there was a head banging between the commissioners, and anyway, it came to kind of head.
Right.
Anyway, things came out, and that's why I called all the Tea Party people and said, you be there. And then the notices came out, and so they started telling people not to come. I said, don't you dare. You tell everybody to come. So I had to call as many as I could to get there. And then we probably had a third of the people that would have been there that hadn't got the notice that was. And that was because Gary went over the top of Carla and posted the notice that it was not that we weren't they weren't going to have the meeting.
Yeah.
So we showed up in number anyway.
Yeah, it was
so
good.
Was,
I mean, there
was
still
good.
A good showing. They heard us out.
Yeah, they did listen.
But they wouldn't have canceled if they hadn't already started getting enough pressure and enough heat, knowing that it was going to be
a
ugly situation.
It was a good old Western showdown.
Yeah,
it was standing room.
And for me, I do not argue. I mean, I completely agree with the assessment that they're taking away our rights. I have no argument with that. I'm always interested in what the motivation is.
Yeah.
Why do they want to?
Well, we would honestly like to.
I gotta leave. I'm really
I think I can tell you. We don't know.
Okay.
We've asked that question very point blank.
We suspect it, and we have confirmed it comes down to some degree. But again,
okay, see you next time.
Thanks, Shauna.
There's probably three or four issues, but it's different with the county commissioner and the minion plant, and some of it's their pet project, and some say, yeah, I know that's some, but I really don't care. But it comes down to allowing A second residence per unit has been one of the reasons it's motivated a lot of these changes. Now they've gone down, you know, they've gone to not only you couldn't have two, but you could not even have one in agricultural zone. To even have the first residence was a condition. You had to go in and get a conditional use permit and ask them, answer all their questions affirmatively to even allow you to build a house, your first house. That's one of the issues. The other has been, and still is to some degree, the tax issue of taking properties off of Greenbelt because they didn't qualify as agricultural property, and the notion that if it's a residential property, then it can be taxed at a low, it will have more value and can be taxed higher than if it's for recreation or agriculture.
Greenbelt provision, right?
Right.
Yeah, I read up on that because I didn't know anything about
right.
it.
Right, FAA, they'll refer to it as FAA or Greenbelt. So, but there has, I mean, just in the last week to 10 days, there's some major, even since this meeting, I was on the phone for an hour today, there's some major blow-ups between the county commissioners. I mean, stuff that's been brewing for a long time, and part of it is this being an election year. Some of them that are coming up for a re-election. Havishaw that was there in the meeting says, I am not rerunning. I have 10 months left. I have no bones to pick. I'm going to call it how it is. And so he has nothing to lose. So he's going to just, you know, take a stand where he feels. And it's really causing some major friction in a lot of county issues.
Well, and I always think that the one thing, and you guys have done it, you've done a good job of it, is I always think when you ask the right questions, meaning what motivates this? And you put somebody backpedaling because they, you know, unless they want to say, look, we need tax dollar. We can get more tax dollar this way. Fine, that's your motivation. I'm okay with that. I just want to know what it is.
Right, right. Just be straight, and that's all we've said.
Yeah.
It's just be straight with us.
Yeah.
We know that we're not getting the straight answer, just as Ben described how the meeting was conducted, we had a similar meeting the next day for a different topic, but it was on they are developing an ordinance for group gatherings, and they initially had started out basically saying if there's any group over a certain size, we think that we need to have some regulatory permitting process for that because there might be somebody that gets sick or there might be health issues or there might be whatever, and we'd like to have a health inspection done and ensure the number of porta-potties and the access and how many cars could park there, you know.
But it will majorly affect Deer Springs.
Yeah.
That would go on. And so in this meeting, that was also brought up, and they did backpedal pretty fast there to say, well, okay, family reunions, that could be an exception, okay. Even things like initially church groups or any, you know, assemblies of people would, in theory, be in this permitting process. And so, but even things like, you know, Disney's doing a movie here and they're bringing 400 people in. And so I guess that would require, you know, some special permitting process and ensuring all of these types of elements for food handlers, licenses, and on and on and on. But anyway, we went to the meeting the next day, and there was just a notice taped on the door saying, because of last night's, it was a kind of an insulting word, like last night's
outcry,
inhospitable outrage or something from the community or whatever, that we've postponed this because it's obvious that there was enough outrage over these things that we, you know, couldn't move forward with these, activities at this point in time or something like that. And so, you know, so people drive. I know several people drove from up on Cedar Mountain because the nemesis of this was the Duck Creek Billy Chili Cook-Off. That was their thing of, boy, that's got to be under more control than it is, which is a community gathering that they've had up there
for 20 years.
20 years. And now they feel like they need to start regulating it because somebody might get sick. And so they blame it all on liability and all of these kind of things, but But the second you do try to regulate that, you've now assumed all the liability. And so, you know, I don't know what the thinking is, but it's rather backwards.
Well, but their whole thing, I mean, he said in that meeting, the chairman, Jim Baker, in the meeting before, you know, it's not a matter of some of the simple things, because the health department regulates food handling and stuff like that on a commercial basis, and it should. But he said, you know, any gathering to have adequate restroom facilities and sanitary hand washing facilities. So we have the motorcycle race and, you know, our stuff. We have a scout camp at the ranch or something. We've got to have a certain number of porta potties per person, and you've got to have hot water, running water, hand washing stations, and stuff like that.
Yeah, the motorcycle race would have been a perfect example. That would have fell under this.
Under the purview of this thing?
The purview.
I shut down a rave party once with 10,000 people at it. I was the least popular person. And there's still film of it. Fox News up in Salt Lake has it. I was very unpopular. But they had all sorts of violations.
Yeah.
So I understand both sides of the argument.
Yeah.
But I think they're getting a little...
Well, that's but places County, like Deer Spring,
you know? Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
People are coming there. They want to go and have a scout... you know, we go and conduct scout camps to teach you how to poop in the woods and take and wash your hands for you know, in a clean nature, but to survive without those things. And now if we've got to... We're regulated that we have to provide all that.
That's
it's counterproductive.
It's complete. I mean, if I had the Clarkson family reunion in this room, we would have to shut it down because inadequate exiting.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
But and that's what I shut that rave party down for, was inadequate exiting. You know, they did not have the exits, and they had 10,000 people in that stupid thing. But the thing that you look at here is there's logic, and then there's completely unreasonable, illogical suggestions, you know.
Right.
And that's the thing. I think you guys have done a really good job at asking the right questions. You know, why? Why are you doing this?
Our number one question in all of this, if there's a problem, then there should be a reasonable solution. We move forward. But every time we come back to, where's the problem? Why are you trying to fix something that is not broke? Where has this happened? If this gathering has happened and people have got sick and hospitalized, we've had a big problem, then let's address it. But based on this fear that what if maybe if the planets aligned and a meteorite fell out of the sky and we wouldn't know how to handle it, we better write a meteor evacuation plan for the county. Those kind of scare tactics are just ridiculous.
What if Sam and Ella show up?
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's probably enough on that, and I have added here for agenda item, we'll keep talking about it, a record storage item, so we'll I think, move forward with that, and we'll discuss it every meeting as we experiment around with the electronic storage. Any other items of business?
Oh, where are we at on the thistle?
14.0.
To get it taken care of this spring.
Because
I know I'm going to be triple of what I have.
I think the best thing is for you to call Carl Gurr with the county extension. They're having a weed conference meeting in Panguitch on the 23rd of this month that you'd also be welcome to go to if you want to. But Carl, I think, will be there kind of representing our general needs, and I don't know of any better way to deal with it than that.
Well, they're still actively working on it, Dan.
They'll be out spray if we just stay on them and encourage them and agree with them and have Paul coordinating or, in, you know,
Carl
get
works
them out
for
there.
The county, and, you know, that's his deal is weed abatement. Their fees and stuff are probably more reasonable than anything else.
They're definitely reasonable.
So I can't think of any better thing for you to do than to call Carl and make sure he's aware.
Are they only targeting... We've got two different kind of thistles that are really invading, but I think they're only targeting one.
As far as I know, they were only targeting... For the life of me, I can't think of what it's called, but last year they only targeted one that I was aware of.
I know Kevin Heaton, I was in the Farm Bureau meeting last night, and he went through all kinds of things I didn't know that they were even working on for weed abatement and tamarisk abatement and all kinds of things. So my guess is if we bring it to their awareness, they seem to be really trying to keep a handle on noxious weeds in the county. But they kind of look at things over like a 10-year window, where we kind of want to say, hey, what's happening next week?
Well, but and you know, Paul has purchased a spray rig that you can go in the Rhino, and some that's right along the roadside and stuff that we've seen get out of hand, you know, up there towards Broadhall and stuff. We should be able to, for very minimal amount of, you know, cost, get up there and hit it at the right time and stay ahead of it a lot better.
Yeah, that's the big thing, if you hit it at the right time.
And that stuff that we, I think if we keep Carl on his toes, making some phone calls to him, so that he knows, oh, hey, the roads are, you know, in good enough condition now, or things are going to be heading out if I don't get up there and spray next week, or that's important. All those thistles, I mean, it's the timing of them is really critical.
Like, I've seen two different types up there.
There are definitely two different types up there, at least two.
A big white one that gets real tall, and then like mine are just like maybe that, 2 feet. 3 feet.
That might be actually a rare podunk thistle.
Yeah, that might be, you know, an endangered
a new one.
An off-breed, huh?
Yep.
Okay. I think, you know, the board knows this. Ben says I should mention this, but as a result of a lot of these things and many more too many to mention, and because of the concern of the individuals that would be running for election, I have elected and registered this morning to run as county commissioner. So hopefully we'll make it through the primaries here that are coming up in June, and we can add a little bit more of the rural management techniques to our county government.
So who's your lobby? Who's your campaign manager? Is it Ben?
I guess it is now. you know, so I'll do
whatever I have to do to not let those that are in office be reelected.
It was either me or Ben, and Ben somehow won that argument.
As he often talked about, seldom seen Ben technique.
Yeah.
Look, Dirk.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, we've got to, again, you know, Habashaw is not rerunning, and some of the things that, you know, I don't agree with everything, but he has really made a concerted effort and made a lot of progress for the county and done a great job in most of those areas. And so I'm sad to see him leave, other than he has been there for 8 years. Dan Hewlett's been there for 8 years, and right now in our federal and everywhere I look, you've been there 8 years, it's time for some new thoughts and turnover. And so, but again, Dan is by far the most damaging in a lot of these areas, and is rerunning, and needs to have some new thought and somebody in there to.
Who else filed? You know, Dirk.
Well, so Dan is rerunning, and Jim Madsen is running against Dan,
good.
And Jim, you know, we know well enough, and I've
he's a good guy, right? Because I hear good things about
yeah.
him.
Yeah, right now he's definitely the most logical pick for what we would want.
The other seat that would be vacated by Commissioner Habashaw, the person that had announced publicly that they were running for that seat was Jim Baker, who is, you know, currently the chairman of planning and zoning and
the one that's very much
aligned with with Hewlett. And so we tried to talk quite a few other people into running against him, but
you're talking about the Lost Highway guy.
Yes.
Yeah. He's a really
very
fine
good guy.
Person.
Yeah, yeah.
A great
I'm surprised.
Mechanic and honest. But, you know, to understand some of these rural aspects of
well,
stuff.
In that public hearing, because he conducted, he's the chairman of the Planning Commission.
Right.
And he mentioned no less than 30 times litigation and liability, and we've got to write all these rules. And I met with him last week. I met with him for a couple hours personally to say, look, if you wrote all that rules, wouldn't that still be a liability? And this could still, oh, yeah, I guess we need to write more rules. I mean, he's, you know, my take is, again, I think that he moved here from California, you know, but he's bringing a lot of that, and he will tell you, well, if we had proper planning and enough of ordnance, then we could outrun that. I think that life is inherent to have some risk, that you just have to deal with the crap as it comes. This whole idea that every time something might come, then you write four more laws and stuff, and he's into that downward spiral, I think. It's an unsolvable problem to write more regulation, more regulation.
I know he was running for county commission. I had no idea that he was on the board.
Yeah. Yeah. He's been on planning commission for about 5 years and in the thick of all these things of and he'll tell you he didn't. And I think that he didn't mean to.
And in fact, he called me and told me directly, said, I want you to know that I'm not pushing these items. And as Mark Havishaw said in the meeting, when those comments were said, he said, I think that I can tell you over the last 8 years that you guys have voted unanimously for all of these things that, you know, that we've outlined, the reduction in rights. And so, you know, I actually don't think their intent, and his or Hewlett's, is to say, well, we took away your rights. We were just protecting you from irritating your neighbor. You know, and if you get into lots of detailed discussions with them, it's like, yeah, but, well, what do we do if somebody comes in complaining about this then? If somebody complains about this, what ordinance do we have to deal with that? And I'm like, you don't have one, and it would be fine for you to say, gee, I guess you better go talk to your neighbor if he's irritating you. We don't need to be involved in that. And even if it comes to the point of litigation, we don't, county, should not need to be involved in that in every case.
Some of the easy stuff. I mean, some of the just the basic stuff of, you know, doing away with the greenbelt provisions to provide for agricultural appraisal versus real value. I mean,
and they will tell you, and we,
it's money. It's,
we confronted that in the meeting and in public. They will say that was not our agenda. But then, if you look at every aspect of the ordinance, even things that it allows, and it will put in brackets, for personal use only, and so forth. So you know you could never use that as a use that would qualify for greenbelt, because greenbelt has to have a commercial use.
Right.
And or they'll say commercial use is not allowed, and so forth. And I've had conversations with members of the county employees who have told me directly that they know that questions have been asked now, how do we, you know, if we can avoid the greenbelt tax status on all these properties, then we would, you know, solve a lot of the budget problems. And so that's what we're, you know, we should be as employees in support of this. And so we know that that's at least a part of it, but I suspect another part of it is just, many, many times they'll say, yeah, well, what if, you know, somebody's got a piece of farm out there and then somebody moves in next door and they don't like what the farmer's doing and they don't like this and they don't like this and then we've got these, you know, conflicts. And so since most of this area is going somewhat towards, more towards residential, maybe we need to take the agriculture uses away so that when this happens, there won't be a future conflict. And although some of that may happen in a natural marketplace anyway over the course of the next 100 years, we don't need to be the one that says, because this might happen in 20 years, we're going to take it away from you now. And that's kind of the underlying mentality.
It's like people who build a house next to the railroad and then complain about the
noise. Then they want to shut it down, yeah.
Or they build a house out near the airport and then they complain about the noise.
Right.
Now, it's one thing if the airport moves next to you. It's something else entirely if you move next to the airport.
Their concern was that there'd be a conflict between building and all these big dairies that are in King County.
Yeah.
All these big dairies. It stinks so bad.
Feedlots and stuff, you know, and we're like, wow.
And every example that they bring up, my question has been, okay, tell me when that's happened in Kane County. Oh, well, but it might.
You know,
and I'm like, okay, until it does or there's really a threat, then.
Every single time, I used to have firefighters come to me all the time, and they'd start complaining about somebody else.
the very first question I would make out of my mouth would be, have you talked to them?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
It's out of my hands. I'm not doing anything about it.
I know that some of it's very well-meaned, but it's just a direction I don't. I know that the majority of the members at Deer Springs would not be in favor of, because it's the whole atmosphere why we came to Kane County, to have some freedoms rather than over-regulation. And so I think that's what we need to just keep focusing for, and try not to make things too personal, but try to, you know, say, look, we're not in favor of these things, and we don't see why.
Well, like I say, I appreciate the work you guys have done on it. I mean, you've gone at them, and I think it's made a, you know, at least it's a stop to a, you know, this blanket boom, 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 boom.
Right. Clearly, that happened.
I think both of them lost at least 100 votes at the Wednesday night meeting. I think everybody looking to a change.
Well, any other business?
Nope, I gotta go.
I make a motion that we close our meeting.
I second that motion.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Nay.
Okay, we close.